Well, I am Wayne Fetterman.
Oh, you know, there's no greater thrill for me personally to have somebody come out here who's unknown.
It was. I feel like it was the earthquake moment.
And stand up in front of an audience and absolutely wipe them out. First appearance, coast to coast. That's great.
You can say before Freddie Prinze and after Freddie Prinze.
For tonight's show, well, it's hard because, there were other comedians that definitely got careers, but not... There's never been anything as dramatic before or since. It was just...
Cemented the possibilities of what could happen. Welcome to the CISO C Show. I'm Andrew Steven. If you haven't heard the news, CISO is working on a show called There's Johnny that takes place behind the scenes of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson. The show was written by Paul Reiser and David Steven Simon, and although there's still a little bit of time before the show comes to CISO, just last week they premiered at Tribeca Film Festival. So I thought it was perfect time for another installment, part two of this discussion, of Wayne Fetterman's comedy film school.
You talk to any of the comedians from that generation, they're all, and Shanley, any of those guys, they all go to, they don't go to New York, they're all going to L.A. to try to get on the Tonight Show. Leno, you know, who was the, you know, an improv comedian in New York. Obviously, Letterman didn't even go to New York, he went straight here. But that was all because of what happened to Freddie Prinze, and then subsequently happened to other comedians. Roseanne Barr it happened to, Seinfeld in a way. But some comedians, like Bill Maher, talks about it. He did a number of sets on The Tonight Show, and nothing really happened. So there was
he has his own
show. And now
show.
He does, but it wasn't that dramatic. Yeah, yeah. It wasn't – everyone thought, oh, you do The Tonight Show.
It wasn't a game changer.
It wasn't you're a made man or anything that. So I just – I want to make sure that I balance out that everyone who did The Tonight Show wasn't immediately.
Yeah.
But every once in a while it would happen, and it was – I mean, that moment was incredible, and that's really changed the landscape.
What I was going to say is I think it's so special, especially I can imagine then when there wasn't as much of a proliferation of late night, to see the host who just gush over someone.
100% what you're saying.
I mean,
it was insane. I mean, there's no and I know I feel like I'm overstating it, but the fact that he bumped a guest.
Yeah.
To talk to a comedian who was on the show for the first time. And I have to say, part of the enthusiasm was also Sammy Davis.
Yeah.
When I since have looked at the tape, it's at the Museum of, the Paley Center, I think it's called now. It used to be called the Museum of Television and Radio. Before that, the Museum of Broadcasting. I know. Do you know what that is at all?
Yeah. I know.
The one?
No, I haven't been to it, but I watch all the Paley Center panels and
stuff. That's kind of what they're known for. So anyway, that's an important moment in Johnny Carson's and his connection to stand-ups. And for most comedians of that generation, doing their first set on The Tonight Show was the most important moment of their life. Roseanne Barr said it was more thrilling than having her children. And I know that's sounds like a horrible thing for a parent to say.
Well, no, I think there's a difference between having your child and being a parent.
You're right. So.
And so that change, that's what sort of cemented the stand-up's desire to be on The Tonight Show.
Well, they all wanted it. They wanted to do Sullivan before that,
Exposure, but this was a special moment.
But this was a special, especially because if he brought you over to the couch. So now there was a new hoop you had to jump through. You not only had to go on The Tonight Show, do well, but make it over to the couch.
Be invited back.
Yeah. There was a number of things.
Stages.
So that's I think the important story to know about Johnny Carson that they didn't really cover that much in the documentary.
Why do you think, was it just the prestige of the show and the fact that it had eyeballs, or was there something about Carson himself that made comedians look up to him?
He was a comedian himself. As a matter of fact, I saw him do stand-up in 78. I guess I can figure this out. At a place in Florida called the Sunrise Musical Theater, he did about an hour of stand-up. His opening act was a singer named Dorothy McGuire from the McGuire Sisters. I can't imagine you would know.
I know what... the name, the McGuire Sisters.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So, yeah, she was one of, I don't know which one in the group she was, but so one of the McGuire
Sisters. Dorothy.
She opened for him, and then he did an act, and his encore was, it was great. It was great. It was a tape, like I guess with a reel-to-reel tape or something like a pantomime bit where he played a kid show host who was hungover. So he would go like, hey, kids, how are you? And it would come back, hey, you know, very reverberated, and he would react to how loud that was and pound on the desk and things like that. That was I remember that was his closer. But I couldn't believe that I was standing when I saw him, like there was just air between myself and John.
There wasn't a screen.
It was air between myself and Johnny Carson. It was mind-blowing.
I mean, there's always air between. There was always air between you and Johnny Carson.
That's not true.
Just a lot more air.
But there was like cities and things and the same buildings.
And air.
You're right.
Sorry, I'm being difficult.
No, I like it. I like it. Just dashing the dreams.
Was his stand-up like his...
No.
Nothing.
Not like
the monologue.
No, his monologue was just a series of these jokes, and I was such a big fan. Because he put the jokes on cards. He didn't have a cue card holder guy. He put them on the ground across, so you could see by his eyes as he went through the whole monologue.
So you knew when it was wrapping up.
Yeah, it's amazing. You get from left to right. I'll never forget it. I was like, okay, and he was just a master at it because he wanted to connect. So I remember watching him do that. I saw him one night he came out, his fly was down. That went out on the air. There was a famous night that I think he got into a fight with his producer because his son that got into a car accident and died. So at the end of the show, he was just doing a tribute. Mm-hmm. It's like, I can't, you know. And I remember what he said. He said, you know, in the papers, they have his driver's license picture, which is always like the worst picture you take. And then he goes, I just want you to know what he looked like. And it was so, and you never saw Carson do anything like that.
Yeah.
And he was very emotional. And then apparently I learned later that one of the producers, I don't know if it was Freddie DeCorvette, gave him the wrap-up sign. And he was like, don't give me the wrap-up sign now. Yeah, so it was, I remember that night. It was fun to watch. I mean, obviously, I never knew him in New York. I was too young to know that they did a New York show. Although once a year, they do an anniversary show and show clips from the old Tonight Show in New York. And so that was always thrilling. Like, oh, he was just a kid doing this thing. Although he was, I think he took over at like 30, in his 30s.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 35.
He was young.
I think he was 35. So...
when you started watching, was it like something you tried to see every night? Or
I tried to. I mean, obviously, it was on. Then it was a 90-minute show. So it was 11:30 to 1. So that was pretty late for me. But starting around ninth grade, I started watching the show, which was like 73. So I started watching as much as I could, see who the guests were. And if there was a comedian on, I would watch it.
How much of that influenced your desire to do comedy?
Well, it was very important because you could see like, oh, there's somebody who's 23 years old doing the Tonight Show and getting laughs and then opening for some singer, Anne Murray in Vegas this weekend or performing at the Improv.
Or so, Dorothy McGuire.
I don't know if she was the headliner, but yeah. So I think it was important. It was really important. And then I think it was the start of what we call now the comedy boom was – that all came together, and then there was books written about it, and then next thing you know, these little clubs start opening up all across the country, and that in the 80s. So,
And you credit that to Carson,
partially.
The Tonight Show.
Partially, yeah. I mean, there was a confluence. Am I saying that right?
I think so. A confluence.
Confluence. I said confluence, right?
I don't know which is more correct.
I think confluence is right. But there was a number of elements that combined to create that boom.
Yeah, perfect
including
storm.
That book. Yeah. So part of it was what was going on with The Tonight Show. And also Carson seemed to like young comedians.
Mm-hmm.
He really seemed to like breaking. Like, I think he said it, and it was true. Like, you saw it with Roseanne or Shanley or Seinfeld or any of these guys. So Stephen Wright, do you ever see what happened with Stephen Wright? He had kind of a Freddie Prinze moment where he went on, killed, and was back like a week later.
Right, yeah.
Like no one, a week later? It's insane. So
where, when you first like started pursuing comedy in earnest, where sort of was that with the Tonight Show history?
Well, I started in the 80s, and I passed at the comic strip like in 83. So Carson had been 11 years in that, but I was in New York. I had gone to New York University. I don't want to brag. Tisch School of the Arts.
Then don't.
So no,
you don't want to.
I don't want to, but I can't help it. That's what I'm saying. It's like a battle.
Have you gone to like a therapist or anything?
I don't go to a therapist. I don't believe
in
therapists.
What about just a doctor?
Just a regular doctor?
Yeah.
Just prescribe something?
Maybe there's a pill that can help you be more humble. Humble pie? Maybe he recommends. He has a great recipe.
Yeah. I could see that. Maybe. All right. I'll think about that.
Right. So don't busk.
Don't busk. And be humble, Fetterman.
Be humble.
And now I'm talking to myself in the third person.
It's all right.
It's great.
Maybe
it's
you
great.
Should be a therapist.
I do need therapy.
Sorry. So you were in New York.
So I'm in New York, and everyone wants to do that. And it was harder to do The Tonight Show as a New York comedian because the booker, this guy, Jim McCauley, was in L.A. and saw mainly L.A. acts. Obviously, he had already put on Letterman, Leno, and all of those guys. And also, can I say something else? Just backing up a little bit.
Yeah.
That I think Carson does not get enough credit for. I mean, besides being he was just a natural as a host. You've seen the clips. He's just very, he was engaged. He was funny. I don't know, just incredible. Next level. I feel no one's touched him as far as that. But he would let young comedians host the show. Have you ever heard of Letterman letting anyone host the show? Only when he had a heart attack. That was the only time he let anyone else host the show. You ever heard Leno let anyone host the show? No. Ever heard Conan let anyone else host the show? No. All of them are too scared. And Carson was like, I don't care. I'd love to do it. Just think about that. Like basically saying, yeah, I'll let somebody else. That's how confident and great he was at this job. It's unheard of.
Yeah.
And it was commonplace for him. He'd do a repeat on Monday. He only worked 4 days a week by the end, or 3 days even. He would do a repeat on Monday or a repeat on Friday, and then he'd just do those shows, and then he would take weeks off and just let either young comedy. I mean, obviously, Joan Rivers was like the permanent guest host for a while.
Until that schism.
Yeah, that a huge, she blew that. That was her fault. But she, he created her.
Yeah.
He was the one that really, really liked her. So yes, my goal as a comedian was to get on The Tonight Show. And it was very singular.
Yeah.
It's very singular, which, I mean, I had other goals, like create an hour so I could headline and that kind of stuff. But I wanted it was the ultimate Stanford, not only for me, for your peers.
Yeah.
Or parents, I hate to say it.
No. What? Then don't say it.
Again. I love it. Why do I keep...
Sorry.
I'm trying to think. I mean, by the time I was getting close to doing The Tonight Show, there was already... Arsenio was doing a show, which... And Carson had a lot of shows that came up against him that he knocked off. It's kind of a different... He sort of had the whole landscape to himself for decades. And... Because they tried. Joey Bishop had a show. Obviously, Merv Griffin had a late night show.
Chevy Chase show.
Chevy Chase had a show. I think that was...
That was like four episodes.
Yeah. Magic Johnson had a show. There's been a number of... There was something called the Wilton North Report. The guy who just died from Canada. His son is a famous singer. Alan Thicke.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Thicke of the Night was a show. Yeah. And then there was also the start of all these comedy boom shows that I did in Comedy Tonight, but there was nothing compared to The Tonight Show. And I came agonizingly close to getting the show. This booker who I was talking about, Jim McCauley, who, by the way, I think it's everyone knows there were some women, like comedians they would sleep with and put them on the show. It was very, very weird. Very sketchy dude. Although he put some great comedians on the show. There's no question.
Mm-hmm.
No question. And he came to see me. I had a manager. He loved me. He says, I'm coming back to see you. He got drunk that night, fell asleep in the back of the improv, didn't see the set, which was very good, then couldn't reschedule. And then all of a sudden, Carson announces that he's going off the air. So and then everyone's trying to get on the show. Mm-hmm. So it made it doubly hard. And ultimately, I didn't get on the show.
I'm sorry.
I know.
Do you need a hug?
Thank you. No, I don't need a hug. I don't need a hug. But I will say this. For the first year that Leno did the show, he did it from Studio One, which is where Carson did the show from. So when I did Leno, so I got on Leno right away because Jimmy Brogan was booked, a comedian, like closer to kind of knew what I could do. So at least I had the same stage that Carson did the show from before, because Leno eventually moved. Yeah, yeah. So it was the same curtain guy, same spot where Carson did his monologue. Same studio, Studio One. And, you know, thinking about, looking back, I might have, because I've always suffered from stage fright or had a battle with it, it might have been too much for me, even to do the Tonight Show. It might have just been a spectacular flame out or something. So,
well, it's great that you were able to do it on that stage. And then even in New York at the Carson's old stage, too.
That was, and for me, as a comedy historian, as you know, I'm an adjunct professor, not only doing it from Studio 6B, where I did The Tonight Show with Jimmy, but also that was incredible. Same spot where Carson did it all those years. But also that's where they did the Texaco Star Theater, which was the first major show with Milton Berle from 48 to 54 that they did out of New York.
And Arturo Toscanini in the NBC Orchestra.
Upstairs in 8th. They were on 8. They were on 8.
That's right. You're right.
Yeah.
You're the professor.
But yes. Yes, it's amazing you know about Tuscan.
I did an episode about
what
30 Rock.
Oh, you did?
The building, yeah.
Radio City.
Yes, well, and because it was about the Muppet Closet, really. And so I did a little bit of background and stuff like that.
Of course. That's when they were on Par, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so I know a little bit about Par just because I'm a big Muppet fan. And so, the little worm that ends up being the nose of the...
No, that's now part of the tour.
Yeah,
they've reorganized
the hallway and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So last time you were on the show, you gave me some homework. You told me to listen to Spanx for the Memories.
What did you think? You didn't like it.
It was funny.
Okay.
And I don't mean that in a dismissive way, but I laughed. I laughed a lot. But it's also not my cup of tea.
Are you all just Kate Berlant up?
No, probably my favorite comedians of today would be right now, other than you, would be
thank you,
Mike Birbiglia and Tate Holmes.
Oh, okay. Well, so you like a little more long form.
Yeah, and I like being able to go from goofy to like almost about to shed a tear because it's like a touching moment.
Okay, well, that's a different thing. That's
it is.
Yeah. I could see how. Yeah, no. I was talking. What I like about Skanks for the Memories.
Skanks for the Memories. I said Spanx, which is maybe I listened to the wrong thing.
Yeah, I was talking about a Dave Attell album. I don't know. The Toadie Fields last album. So, what I love about that album is I just love the immediacy of it. How the joke. I just love the joke structure. But again,
there is an energy about it that is very.
Did you grow tired of it after a while?
No, I didn't. I listened to the whole thing and enjoyed it. But it's like, I heard it. I was glad I heard it, but I don't know if I would ever want to revisit
it. I love it. Thank you. Thanks for the honesty.
So, I was wondering if there's any homework you can give me related to Carson. Or Carson era comedy.
Well, now, what happened was after Carson, can we loop back to earlier, you said something about Carson getting the rights to The Tonight Show. Well, when he moved to California, there was about 10 years later, around 1979, he got into a dispute with NBC because they had apparently erased a lot of the 60s.
Yeah, they would tape over the tapes when they ran out.
Yeah, it was just because they cost $65.
Yeah.
They were expensive. I mean, I understand NBC. So he was like, I want to own the show as well. And that's why he, Carson Productions owned the show. Mm-hmm. And then for years, you would never see it. You'd just see a clip get licensed. They pulled down all the YouTube stuff. Very few people had like clips of it. Mm-hmm.
Every now and then you'd see like an infomercial for like the best of.
Yes, yes.
But
so they
still
were selling,
that was...
They were just selling DVDs.
But it wasn't... It was very, very small pieces of a huge catalog.
Right, huge. And I think they knew what they... I think they knew what they had. But then Antenna TV comes along. Do you know who that is? It's, I don't know, a little outfit that licensed these Tonight shows and puts them up on the air. And now everyone's, of course, taping them immediately. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, DVRing them. Is that the correct term? What would you say?
I don't. I just have an Apple TV, so I'm.
You don't.
I
you just stream
that.
You
I,
just
yeah, stream. Yeah. I went from antenna to stream.
Right. Well, this is
not
ironically
that same antenna.
Yeah. Yeah. Different antenna. So now there's a plethora of pristine Johnny Carson clips that were in the vaults for years. They're coming out and they're fantastic. So, well, obviously, rewatch that special.
Okay.
That's the first thing. That's on YouTube. And then, well, here's what I would do. Here's what I would do. I mean, I would obviously I'd just peruse those clips on YouTube would be my advice. But there's two specials that are, they're just to learn more about. There's one. The 60 Minutes interview, because he never really did interviews. Mm-hmm. And you really, it's fantastic.
Okay.
And now there's outtakes from that interview when he died. They expanded it. So the 60 Minutes interview with, I believe, Mike Wallace. And then there's something called Carson Goes Home, which is about Johnny going back to Nebraska. And reminiscing, and he hangs out with kids from he went to high school with, and teachers, and this is just to get to know Johnny mm-hmm. as opposed to the show. And then the rest, there's just a lot of clips now. So
yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's now, you know, I spoke earlier that they do anniversary. They did anniversary shows every year where they would show clips,
yeah.
and then have a few guests on. So
try to find some of those.
Those anniversary shows are great. Are great.
And maybe listen to
I mean, do you know about the famous tomahawk? Does that mean anything to you with Ed Ames? If I said Ed Ames tomahawk?
I have something that is conjured up, but I have no idea if it's
let me hear. What do you have?
Is it's the, you know, guy on a spinning thing and throwing tomahawks at him?
No.
No? Okay.
Not that at all. This is the weird thing, is this is why I'm a great person. And I hate to say it.
I know. I think you are a great person. So
no,
I'm
no,
okay
no. You're supposed to say. Why do you say it?
But I'm now breaking the cycle for more comedy.
I love it.
Hashtag jokes.
I understand. You took the construction, then it changed.
Because
it.
I think you're a great person.
Thank you.
And you know you mean a lot to me.
I don't want to even describe what it is. I don't even want to describe what it is. But Ed Ames, Tonight Show, Tomahawk.
Okay. Go on the dark web and try to find that.
No, you will find that.
Oh,
It's from the New York Tonight Show. And Ed Ames is demonstrating how to throw a tomahawk. And I guess the other clip would be the Don Rickles one, because we just lost Don Rickles. We didn't mean to lose him. He died. We know where he is. Right?
I mean,
we in society lost.
Well, we don't know where he is.
We don't. You're right.
I mean, no
I don't
really
know. You're right. We know where the body of Don Rickles is.
Yeah. Do any of us really know where we are?
I don't even know what's happening right now. Are we allowed to talk about where I am right now? Okay, we are in Universal Plaza in the Black Tower, right?
Yeah, the 10 UCP, the trapezoid next to Universal Studios.
Yeah. This used to be where Lou Wasserman, does that name mean anything to you? Yeah. He was...
You said it when you came in.
Yeah, well, he was they called him the last mogul, Hollywood's last mogul. And he started out in Chicago, working theaters. I'm working in movie theaters, I think, taking tickets and then managed bands and then headed up MCA with his buddy Jules. Was Ronald Reagan's agent. Ronald Reagan, the president of the United States, had an agent. Guess who he was? Lou Wasserman. Negotiated a $1 million deal for him when Reagan was at Universal. The Last Mogul. So I'm always thinking about Lou, and his wife's name is Edie. I think they both passed away.
Be a great title for a biopic about him, The Last Mogul.
Yeah, there's been a couple of documentaries. One flattering, one not so flattering.
So watch them both and get a
maybe you'll find the truth in there somewhere. So is there anything else you need to know about? So those are the two specials, like the interview with CBS, but that's more about knowing him as a person. Like, he's a very weird guy. You know, just think about doing that job like every day.
No, I think that's it. I mean, unless there's any other stories or memories or anecdotes that stand out to you. I mean, we could go on. We could have a whole podcast just about Johnny Carson and week after week after week and then fill our own.
No, what I'm most curious, and this maybe isn't even for the podcast, is just how he seems to somebody who doesn't know him as the host, that knows him only from film clips or TV clips or video clips. So as opposed to myself, it's like, oh, that's the host of The Tonight Show when I was a kid, and suddenly I was old enough to stay up and watch him.
For me, it's like when I discovered U2 or discovered the Beatles.
Yeah, tell me.
You know, like, you're you know, at least for me, you know, when I was in junior high, when I was 13, 12-ish, whatever that is, that's the first time, like, I bought my own music. It wasn't something that my parents listened to, or something that my parents let me listen to or bought for me. And so there's a lot of bad music out there if you're unfamiliar with it. I don't know if you're aware.
I'm a big music buff.
There's a lot of really bad bands out there that aren't enjoyable to listen to, but people like.
Always been the case. It's always been the case, by the way.
And then, like I said, tracing back influences, and people are reading the liner notes, you know, thanks to this band, who are those, discovering, and then listening to the Beatles, who you'd known about, you know, obviously probably heard some of their songs, heard them in commercials and stuff like that, but then the first time I was old enough to appreciate it and actually like listen, I think when One came out, the sort of best of, you know, I bought that and just listened to it in one setting start to finish. And it was...
I can't imagine what it was. Was it with headphones or like on a...
I think it was with headphones.
Oh, the best. Well, you got the experience.
Yeah. And so it was one of those things where it was like, okay, I get why they were as important as they were. I get why they were what they did. The songs are just great in and of themselves. You know, like if they came out today, like...
But there's no way of knowing that. It's unknowable what you're saying.
So I think, to me, Carson is a little bit like that, where it's like, when the PBS thing came out and I watched that, I got it a little bit. When I see a clip, I get it a little bit. And again, it's as a fan of comedy, you know, wanting to know more and wanting to learn more and trace back. And if everyone is so complimentary of Carson, there's got to be a reason why.
30 years.
Yeah.
30 years. I mean, think about that. He had no idea he was going to last that long doing that. And his retirement, as we talked about, was fantastic. It was like, all right, you're not going to see me again. He worked three times on Letterman or whatever it was.
Here's the one thing I don't understand about Carson.
Go ahead.
His office.
Yeah.
He would work on a couch and use a coffee table as his desk.
Seemed bad for the back.
Yeah, it seemed like you would just be so uncomfortable after like 30 minutes.
You're right. So you're talking about the ergonomics of his
office. It just seemed like that's the worst way to work. So you, what if people want to know more about you, if people are thrilled with this, if they want to attend one of your courses?
Well, you have to be accepted into the University of Southern California. It's not an adult ed class. It's for real students.
You can't just audit it or whatever.
I mean, maybe if you know me, saddle up to me, get to know me, you could audit a class. But
you have an album also.
I have an album that came out called The Chronicles of Fetterman.
That chronicles Fetterman.
30 years of stand-up taken from
as long as The Tonight Show.
Yes, same as the Carson Tonight Show. It's
When was the first one recorded?
The first clip on?
Yeah.
Well, there's two answers. As always, it's complex with me. You're not going to get it straight. The first stand-up clip is from 1984. I do a bit about the 84 Olympics that were held in LA. Mm-hmm. But in as a bonus track, at the end of each disc, or most people get it online, there's a little bonus track. I don't know if you know this about me, but I did ventriloquism in high school. And so there's a clip of me doing ventriloquism way back.
In high school.
Yeah.
But so there is some overlap in the album of the Carson Tonight
Years?
Show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just
saying. The Carson Years? Yeah.
So you can listen to it and know. This
is what I was trying to do to get on the Tonight Show, that they would not have me so close.
Cool. So where can people find you online?
Oh, yeah. At Fetterman is the Twitter.
Insta Fetterman is the Instagram.
I don't really keep up with that, but I'm going to try. I'm going to make an effort.
You Snapchat?
I don't Snapchat, even though I know how valuable that company is. One of these days...
I just got back on the Snap.
You got back on the Snap.
Yeah.
Are you enjoying it?
I enjoy it because there are people on it that I enjoy.
Give me just two.
Like friends.
Oh, just friends of yours.
Yeah.
I love it. Love it. Okay, yeah, so that's it. And then I also have an old-fashioned website. Do you have one of those?
I do.
Is it your name?
It is. It's very creative with the title.
Yeah, same here.
AndrewStephen.com.
Yeah,
WayneFetterman.com.
Yeah.
And people can find when you're performing in a town near them.
Yeah, I'm not great at it, but actually this week, it'll be over by the time this airs. So
you're also in Sandy Wexler.
I'm in Sandy Wexler. I'm in a movie called House.
With Will Ferrell and Amy Poehler.
You know everything about me. And then I just taped
an
episode of Transparent, where I get to play a creepy uncle.
Do you know that name's a play on words?
Yes. Yeah. I thought it was... I could see right through it. All right.
Thank you. Hope this wasn't too bad.
No, I love it. I love it.
That's our show this week. Thanks so much for listening. And thank you to Wayne Fetterman. Hope you have a good week.